Today is Tuesday, June 3rd, 2003. I am at the home of Betsy and Bob Andresen at Villa Marin, the retirement complex high in the hills overlooking Northgate Shopping Center in San Rafael. Bob, your formal name is Robert H. Andresen. What does the H stand for?
Henry.
Oh, Henry, okay. Well, you've had a very rich background in Mill Valley. Before we get into those details, let's talk a few minutes about your background. Tell us about your birth and where you were born and so forth.
Born November the 20th, 1915 in San Francisco.
At a home or hospital?
In St. Luke's Hospital. First lived in south of Market, which is sort of a distinction.
Yes.
And from there we moved out to Sanchez Street, near 18th, in a series of tenements, which our doctor called Finnegan's Row. An interesting mixture of Jewish and Polish and Irish population. And we were there until the third grade. There I attended Everett Grammar School. The principal was Pop Sturgis, reported to be a veteran of the Civil War. Following that, we moved to Ingleside, my father having moved up in the business world, and into a new home on Plymouth Avenue in the Ingleside district. And there I attended Farragut Grammar School. Farragut Grammar School was a monolith located in the Ingleside district. It is now gone.
What do you mean by monolith? One big building?
A big chunk of building.
I see, and it's gone.
Massive concrete.
What street was that on?
That was on Holloway. Between.
And what would be there now?
Housing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We went back a couple of years ago and it was all gone.
Yeah.
So anyway, we cruised along there and my dad was a credit manager with Sherman Clay, fairly responsible position. And then the Depression hit, and he was one of the first to go, being rather high salaried at that time. Lo and behold, he was, before we knew it, he was on WPA.
Oh,
yeah. In the meantime, I'm in high school, working in service stations. And
you know, that's what Warren did too. Warren was a service station man. You're both the team lawyers starting on the bottom.
Thank heaven for service stations to put me through high school and law school. And 50 cents an hour, you know.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good. I got 33 cents an hour.
So, there we were in, where were we?
Well, you were working in service stations.
Yeah.
What sort of work did you do? Pump gas?
I pumped gas, lubed cars. And in those days, we lubricated a car for $1.50.
Yeah.
With jillions of fittings to take care of. Changed the oil, painted the tires, striped them with the silver paint, cleaned the inside and washed the windows, for $1.50.
Oh, my God.
But that lasted all through law school, and it put me through, really.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful. So because my dad had the misfortune of being on WPA, and then ultimately moving up he got promoted into the Treasury Department of the United States. He was quite content until he was never an office man. He liked to do things with his hands. I recall they had lotteries in those days, the Pressman's Lottery and things of that kind, and he won $3,000 once.
Which is a lot of money, I guess.
And he quit his job, and he went to work for the Market Street Railway in the shop.
Oh.
Yeah. Good salary.
Now, where were your parents from originally?
Well, my dad was...
And his name was?
Harry
P. Andresen.
And my mother's name was Sarah Frances Kilroy Maiden. maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was from San Francisco. They were both from San Francisco. They were both born in San Francisco. They were first generation. His parents came from Ireland. My father's parents came from Denmark.
Well, that's why you have the good old Danish name.
Right. My grandfather first came here, got into the, you recall these barges they had out in San Francisco Bay in the old days to unload ships? They were called scows, sailing scows. And under sail. And he'd go out to the ships, load it up, and then take off for the brickyard or wherever he had to go, and out to some hayfield.
That's like the Alma.
That's precisely the
hay scow.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Look up the pedal. I guess it carried anything.
He carried everything. He was carrying bricks from McNear's over to Pinole. And
they went by sail rather than by motor.
By sail, yeah. Oh, sure. And I don't know when, but eventually he wound up in the wine business. He was managing a winery up in first in Livermore, and then in Oakville in the Napa Valley. And he did this during Prohibition. Well, legally,
mm-hmm.
they were bonded, bonded wines.
You're talking about your grandfather.
My grandfather, right.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a winemaker until about the time Prohibition ended, and then he was into the retirement period and out of it.
Okay, let's tell us about college. Where did you go to college?
Oh, yes. Well, once again, because of the money situation, I finished high school in 3.5 years. In order to go to work. And after working for 6 months, I got a scholarship at the University of San Francisco playing football. Incidentally, I lettered in football and track and tennis at Balboa High School. The scholarship didn't last long because I weighed 150 pounds then and I was playing guard. And they were awfully big in those days. And then from there, I went to San Mateo Junior College. Enjoyed it. We had excellent instructors and a good rapport between student and professor. I graduated there in 1986. In the odd semester, that is, I finished in December, State and Junior College Honors, applied for Hastings. What you could do in those days, if your grades were good enough, you submitted your transcript and they made an evaluation based upon the University of California standards, and if they thought you were solid enough, they let you in. So I was fortunate to get into Hastings with 2 years of college behind me. However, I had 6 months to go before I entered law school, so I went out to sea.
Oh.
I sailed on the Monterey in Australia. It's Monterey.
Oh, yeah.
And as a bellboy.
As a what?
Bellboy.
Bellboy?
Yes.
Well, that's pretty low down.
Well,
you
might think so, but it's quite rewarding.
But I mean, is that, I mean, a bellboy, in other words,
A bellboy is the guy, when you want a drink, you call up and he goes up and gets a drink for you, and that sort of thing. And, whatever had to be done, we did it.
This was on a passenger boat.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I was thinking of a working boat.
Oh, no, no. Okay. I sailed on the Malolo the year before for 2 weeks and went out to Honolulu and back.
Which one?
The Malolo.
How do you spell that?
M-A-L-L-O-L-O.
Okay.
And Weeks on that as a bugler. Incidentally, that was my entree to the ship. I could play a bugle, and they wanted a bugler, so.
Oh, isn't that funny?
So I took my trumpet along and played the bugle for them. Unfortunately, while I was playing bugle, all the bellboys were making money, because that's when people were getting on or off the ship and money was floating. So eventually I got out of the bugle business and got into the bellboy business. And fortunately, at the end of 6 months, I got off the ship with $300. And was able to start law school.
Okay.
The ship went down to from here to Honolulu and then to Pango Pango, Suva, Fiji, Auckland, New Zealand, Sydney, Australia, Melbourne.
And now, what year would this have been?
This would have been 1936.
I see. This time is a pretty nice time.
Yeah.
Huh?
So I entered law school in August of 36.
Now, you went to Hastings, so did my husband. He went to it when it was at Van Ness McAllister. Now it's at McAllister and Hyde. Was it still there at the Van Ness McAllister, or where was it?
Well, when I started there, it was in the State Building.
Which was where?
On McAllister Street, you know, the State
but
Building.
But I mean on Van Ness.
No, on McAllister Street. You know where the Supreme Court is?
Yeah.
Right, facing the square.
Okay, so then it moved over. It was also in a state building.
Yeah, there is another state building.
Which has now become the Brown Building.
Yeah, but the...
You know, I mean, it's a white building, but it's known after Pat Brown.
Oh, really?
It's the one that...
The one on the corner.
That went on the corner. That's where they tore the building down there.
This is a building that faces upon the plaza.
Yeah, okay. Well, then it's moved three times at least.
Indeed.
Okay.
We met in the basement of that building.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. The classes were comfortable.
Were there any women at all?
Yes, we had two women in the class.
Because there were very few in Warren, now it's more women than men in law school. Mm-hmm. Would you believe?
I understand that too.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So there, from the State Building, we moved over to Van Ness Avenue. In a second floor of a building over there, nondescript.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, of course, came the beautiful campus on McAllister Street.
Yeah, well, that's been more recent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and you enjoyed your law school and did fine. So.
Law school was the first year was a shock. It's an entirely different system of education and. I recall taking my first examination and getting a D.
Okay.
And I went into the dean with it, who was the teacher of the course, and I said, he must have made some mistake. I don't get D's, you know. Mr. Andreessen, there was no mistake. So I straightened up and flew right and managed to get out of there in 3 years.
Yeah, well. Okay, after you got out of law school, what did you do next then?
Well, after law school, one of the first things I did was to get a job. Jobs were difficult to get then.
This would have been, what, 39?
And 39, yeah. At first I had to pass the bar.
Oh, yeah.
I took the Witkin course, as most lawyers did in those days. Anthony Witkin did a beautiful job in training people. God knows how many volumes of law. Inclined to divert. Yes.
Well, that's just fine. Yeah. That's what makes it more interesting, I think. Okay.
So, let's see, where were we? We're out of law school, and I went to, in desperation, I managed to get a job with the Massachusetts Bonding and Insurance Company adjusting claims, $10 a month.
That was where, based in San Francisco?
In San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And 2 weeks after getting that job, Betsy and I were married.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we'll talk about meeting her in just a few minutes.
Yeah,
but,
that's the story in itself.
Yeah, okay. And then how long were you with Massachusetts Bonding?
Well, 1 year.
1 year.
And then I went to work for the Prudential Insurance Company assistant resident attorney, the real estate investment department, dealing principally in mortgage loans and lease purchase deals and things of that kind.
We're living where, in San Francisco?
San Francisco. Our first home was out on Great Highway.
Oh.
A big apartment out there. $30 a month.
You have to add two zeros to that now.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
Two zeros.
Yeah. We'd open the window at night and the curtains would flow straight in. From there, we stayed there a year, and then Prudential gave me that was the first year I was with Massachusetts Bonding, and after I got out of there and with Prudential, I went up to $150 a month. Then we moved into a much nicer apartment over on 31st Avenue and Fulton, right across from Golden Gate Park, right near Spreckles Lake. We better go back and capture Betsy.
Okay,
Betsy.
Fine, sure.
All right.
That's just fine.
Betsy. I had a good friend, practically a sister, living across the street from me, named E. Zisser.
How do you spell Zisser?
Z-I-S-S-E-R.
Z-I-S-S-E-R, okay.
And very talented piano player, my age. No romantic attachments, just good friends. And I had two friends at San Mateo Junior College who were kind of wild men, big spenders. They called me up and said, "We're all set for New Year's Eve. We got the St. Francis. $14 a couple." I almost died. So I had to get a date, and I ran across the street to see B, and she said, "I know just the girl for you, Betty Brown."
Yeah, Betty.
So we called Betty, and Betty's mother wouldn't let her go.
Mm.
No, kind date, she didn't approve of that at all. I took a classmate of Betsy's, Connie James, a delightful girl, also very talented musically. We had a great time. And,
that's your $14 worth.
Yeah, oh, indeed. And then some. And I didn't give up on Betsy, nor did B. B invited me up to, I was then going to law school, which was fairly close to San Francisco State, which was then located near DeBose on Market Street.
Oh, yeah.
So I could walk up there from law school, and so B said, "Come on up and meet Betty Brown," which I did. We met on the campus, and she introduced us, and then made herself scarce, and then we were two of us were standing there. So Betty said, "Well, let me show you the campus." And we first went into Anderson Hall, and we were up on the top floor walking along. A girl came flying out of one of the classrooms and lab rooms, and she said to me, she said, "Are you Fred Snecks?"
And I said, "No."
The standard, what she said, "Are you afraid of snakes?"
Oh.
And I said, "No, I'm not Fred Snecks." And so she will come with me, and there's this snake wandering around in there, and she wanted me to pick it up and put it back in, which I did. I had to. Painful as it was. So that was Betsy, and the next date was a tennis date. I had my doubts about Betsy at that time. She showed up on the tennis court with a top coat and mittens. Of course, it was January the 7th. And there was a movie, and we won a dollar at the Parkside Theater.
And I think
that's you out to dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And so there we were. That brings Betsy into the picture.
Yeah, that's good.
All right.
Okay, you were in law school, and Betsy was at San Francisco State.
San Francisco State, and we both graduated in 1939. I over at Cal campus, And
you went over there for your graduation.
Oh, yes. Well, it was part of the
I know, but I don't think Warren's
system.
Was there.
Yeah, well.
Of course, Warren was a decade later.
Yeah. But we joined the mob scene. At,
yeah.
So, graduated and then working and finally prudential, and then came the war. I went down and talked to a Major Conrad in the Army and told him I was interested in going into Army intelligence. And he came around and I told him I was an attorney and I had investigating experience with the company.
And he said,
and Grayson, you're just the men we're looking for.
Okay.
Get into basic training and we'll have you out of there in 6 weeks and into the
field.
You know, it's dangerous work. You're going to be down in Brazil one night, and you'll be over in the front lines in the next. We don't know, and but it is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
As big as dollars. And so with all hope, I departed and became not entirely trustful of Major Conrad. I
went
over to the company commander at Rio and managed to get my basic training over there. Asked me what my qualifications were. This was the headquarters company. And he, what's your qualifications for being at a headquarters company? And
can you
type? And I said, no, I can't type. And he said, what's your qualification? I said, well, I have a certain amount of administrative experience. And he said, we take care of that. So I got into basic training and took it over and over again. And Major Conrad let me down, never did call me. I went over and applied for OCS, and Joe said, well, what would you like, what school do you want? And I said, well, I don't care, I just want to get out of this basic training thing. I'm, at this point, I'm drilling squads, and, you know. He, well, you're qualified, and certainly we'll accept you for them. So I went back to the barracks, and that night I got a telephone call from another major. This guy in charge of the investigation division of the Provost Marshal, looking for investigative personnel. And that's where I ended up, in the investigation division.
And what rank were you?
I was a sergeant.
Oh, you're still, you never did get OCS.
No, I never did go to OCS. So I went into... I was a buck private when I moved down there, and then they moved me up to a buck sergeant, and still in uniform. And there I sat and read credit reports and stuff, and finally they moved me out up to Seattle.
Where, when you say down, where were you? Where was down?
In Presidio.
The Presidio, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were investigating civilian personnel for jobs. And, so the next step was I was assigned in civilian clothes out of Washington. There we were fortunate enough to find a wonderful apartment right on the beach in West Seattle. And eventually we had a sailboat anchored just off the shore. And when the time was right, we were sailing away. Great way to fight a war. But it was interesting work. It wasn't particularly dangerous, though. eventually, this became a part of the intelligence. We then became Army Intelligence. They coordinated the two offices, which they should have done a long time ago. And not a particularly exciting thing. I chased down a Japanese balloon once. Out on the Olympic Peninsula, about the Japanese balloons flying over.
I think so.
They were paper balloons that the Japs flew over. And,
what was the reason for them? Just to, so they would know how far things
just
went?
Just to destroy things and kill people.
You mean they had bombs on them?
They had
a
payload on them. And in fact, two little kids were killed down in Longview, Washington.
Oh.
Yeah. They were set up so that they could they'd fly and then they'd descend and then an aneroid barometer would kick in and drop sandbags and go up for another day, and then night would fall, and it'd come down again, until finally, at the appropriate time, it'd come down and drop the payload.
Mm.
Not as far as Montana.
Mm.
That, and worked with the FBI, and I was writing the weekly intelligence report for the Pacific Northwest. I dictated to a little girl by the name of Louise Shireman.
How do you spell Shireman?
S-H-I-R-E-M-A-N. That was over, and we left, and 50 years later, I'm walking across the lobby here in Villa Marin, and a little voice says, "Mr. Andreessen."
Oh.
It was Louise.
Yes, okay.
And she came here and has since died.
Mm-hmm.
Just a charming
woman. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where are we? That's the war.
How long were you in the service altogether then?
Well, about 3.5 years.
I see. Yeah.
Seattle the whole time, except for as the war ended, they sent me down to Texas to go to school and learn how to do surveillance, which I'd been doing already.
Did Steve Polly go with you?
Oh no, this was
Mr. Short.
This was a particularly a business trip that there were a bunch of people in my particular outfit. All over the United States that were brought in
mm-hmm.
and taught how to pick locks and take pictures and how to be spies and spooks. We've been doing it for 3 years. But there were people down there who needed the work, so we went down. Frightening experience there. The last day when everybody was excited about going home, they had target practice. I'd never fired a gun before. It was pretty exciting.
Had you shot guns much?
Pardon?
Had you ever done much gun shooting?
When I was in, regularly when I was in the basic training.
Oh,
unit,
I see. Yeah, okay. Sure.
Over and over again.
Okay.
That and the dignities of being in the Army.
Yeah. Okay, now where did you get out of? Up there? Out of the Army up there?
Yeah, well, I got out of the Army as a special agent of Army Intelligence and with the outstanding rank of the sergeant.
Okay.
Our counter number in the Naval Intelligence were all commanders. So the best kept secret in Seattle was our rank. Because we were all in civilian clothes, they didn't know.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Otherwise, we would have been dead.
Yeah, right.
Because Navy is quite rank conscious.
Yeah,
you know?
So
home we came, and we had hoped to go to South America. In fact, we studied Spanish many nights up in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Got back, and Prudential made a pretty good offer to get me back, and so we didn't go to South America.
Well, were you down there for a visit or to work?
Pardon?
To go to South America just for a visit or to work there?
No, just to go down
there.
Oh,
I see, for a visit. I didn't know where you planned to have a job there.
No.
Okay, so you're back at Prudential.
Back in Pru, and ultimately I became resident attorney there.
What does that mean, the head attorney?
Top dog in the legal department of the real estate investment department.
Okay.
And it was a small department, only three attorneys and else. So then Prudential, this was, let's see, around 1951 or 52, they wanted to assign me up to Seattle, Washington. Called down to the chief counsel's office in Los Angeles and in the delightful news. And so at that point, I said goodbye to Prudential and opened my, I went into the building business at that time. I became Odstead of Finton and Odstead Builders, Sterling Building Company down the peninsula, building 1,000 houses a year. And my job was to coordinate Andy Odstedt's thoughts and on a flow chart and make them go. Did that for about a year or so, and it wasn't going anyplace. I'm principally appearances at city council and planning commissions and supervision and keeping the ball rolling. And then I went into private practice, 1953.
Oh, that was in?
October of 1953, Valley, California.
Well, how did you choose Mill Valley?
Well,
up to now you haven't mentioned it.
Oh, well, I didn't mention living in Mill Valley, did I?
No, not yet.
All right. Well,
you were still living, you lived in the service up in Seattle, and then you came back.
When we came back after the war, we decided we didn't want to live in San Francisco. In the meantime, our house had been sold in San Francisco. We had incidentally bought a house before the war out on 44th Avenue in a nice garden in the sand. And the war came along, we rented it out, and then ultimately sold it. So we came to Marin County as soon as and looked for housing as soon as we got back. We didn't even think about San Francisco. We were around San Anselmo, Ross, Mill Valley. Somehow we kept coming back to Mill Valley, probably because the price was right. And we finally found a lot for $1,200. On McGee Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Steep drop from McGee Avenue down to Corte Madera.
Yeah.
But it was buildable, and bought it.
So you actually built the house there yourself?
Yeah, we hired people.
Well, I
to
know
do
that.
It. Betsy had to round up all this. It was right after the war, and materials were scarce, and Betsy had to go out and round up all the materials. To round up the money. Up went the house. We fired the first crew, and then ultimately our second crew finally got the house constructed. It was an unusual house. It had a garage at the street level, and the main living area was down 10 feet below that, below the street, with a little patio in front of it. Basic unit had about 1,000 square feet on the main floor, but there was a whole basement. And a few years later, I put up a chute and I ran concrete down and poured a foundation, and we put in two rooms in the bath with these two hands.
The house still there?
Yeah.
Did it look much the same?
No, it's been improved. It was sold a couple of times, it turned over, and finally people by the name of Carregas bought it. The
Nice
boys do the...
How do you spell Carregas?
Oh, I didn't
know. Okay.
Had Kleist do a remodeling of it, principally in the downstairs area, extending it out, stepping it down. For over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right, let's get back to Snow Valley now.
Okay, that's a McGee, and then I have you down here as well. So you lived there, according to these records, from 46 to 52.
That's correct, yeah.
And then 52, yeah. I know what happened. You have Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you needed it.
It was 51, actually, Eric. Mm-hmm. No, 52 is right.
52, because
yeah.
That's just when Stuart was born.
So. Anyway, let's get into the city.
All right. Whatever.
As I said, our house was located there on McGee Avenue with this patio down below the road, some 10 feet below the road, really steep embankment. Tonight, I was at a planning commission meeting. I was on the planning commission with Bill Fleming, Bill Hamilton, Gene Crawford, Ed Drexler, George Gosser. Remember Gosser the butcher? It was, that was a...
Bob Faber wasn't on it yet.
He was on it at one point. Yeah, he came later on.
Yeah, okay.
But I was on it for about 4 years, from about 48 until 52. One night, the meeting was interrupted when the policeman came in and said, "You'd better come with me. Somebody crashed into your house." They were driving up, and this is a good story about Mill Valley and police. They driving up, and he said, "Now, this is a fine young man. We had no trouble with him at all. He just had trouble in making the turn, and he didn't make it, and he landed down in your patio. He's been a good
kid."
Was it
a police car that did it, or just a kid?
No, a youngster in a private car. But the police car came down and drove me up.
Yeah.
And we get up there, and they're down on the patio, and there's the car.
Upright, huh?
Yeah. A fine young man. Got to know his family later.
Are you anxious to tell his name?
Let's skip the name.
All right.
Yeah. But he was a good kid. So we got it all fixed up, put the patio back in shape, put the steps up. And his insurance company paid for it, and everybody was happy. And let's see, after the planning commission, there were... Apparently there was activity going on. The Animal Service Agency.
Yeah.
I was on the board and president of that. In those days, we used to meet down in Marin City.
Oh.
And the Family Service Agency consisted of Marie Larson, who was the caseworker and the director and a secretary. More than a Family Service Agency, it was more of a grant and aid situation where we helped people that needed help, whether it was advice, mostly it was money. I was on that for quite a period. I've forgotten how many years now. On community chest drives and, the Commuters Club. I was on the board of that.
Yes, I have you down as the vice president of that.
Yeah.
Now, where did you commute? How come you're on that when you're living in Mill Valley?
Well,
walking to work?
When we first came to Mill Valley, I was working for Prudential.
Oh, I see.
So we were riding Greyhound.
Okay, Greyhound.
And
yeah.
We were fighting Greyhound over rates and stuff.
I see.
George Beadle was then... Granville Beadle, do you remember him?
Yeah.
He was then president, and I was vice president. And incidentally, that club was started by Al Giesecke. Do you remember Al
Giesecke?
We sat up in his house early on, and there were just a few of us, and sat around and talked about Greyhound and what we could do about it, and that's where it started. So that's so much for the Commuters Club.
Yeah. And you have all these other organizations, so many of them here. So you just talk whichever one you want to talk about.
Okay, what do you do?
Well, I have Rotary here.
Rotary, I joined Rotary, I think, in around 1953. It's about the time I opened my office in Mill Valley and was doing business in Mill Valley and therefore became eligible to belong to Rotary.
What are some of the big projects you remember that your Rotary did?
Oh, my.
Just name a few of them that you were closely involved with.
In those days, there was really nothing big. It was just helping people. And I have no particular recollection of any particularly... Not in the scale they are now, they build housing projects and things of that.
No, but I was thinking like they built a bridge in... Boyle Park in memory of Bob Graver.
That was the Lions Club, I think.
Oh,
time.
Pardon me.
Yeah.
Okay, I get the two mixed up. Okay, they're similar. All right.
But I was on the board and president of Rotary.
How long did you stay with them?
I stayed with Rotary until about 1981 when I retired.
Yeah, okay.
And made me an honorary member.
Good.
Honorary life member or something of that kind.
Okay.
A tennis club.
Tennis club.
Yeah.
And when did you join that?
We joined that first in 1948. And then we thought we were going to live down the peninsula when I was working in the Sterling Building Company down there. Dropped our membership in that in 1952 and reestablished shortly thereafter when I opened my law office. We stayed with the tennis club and I became president. I was president the year the new clubhouse was built.
Mm-hmm.
So honorary members of that.
Good. Well, I can see. Now, Tama Pius Park neighborhood. Of course, you're still living up on McGee, so you have to get down to Walnut and Catawba before you can talk about that, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, you can do whatever you want to do. Tama Pius.
All right. When we sold our house on McGee for two reasons. One, we were afraid that Eric was going to go over the edge of the balcony and land down some 30 feet below. And two, it looked pretty much like we were going to move down the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we changed our mind about the peninsula and rented a house on Walnut, which was owned by the Watsons. Forgot his first name. I think he ran.
Yeah, I have it here anyway.
We remodeled that. We added a bedroom into a family room and connected it with the kitchen. Work upstairs. And the sort of a house that required a lot of work. We had
Does it look today much like it did when
pretty much the same,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. See, that's when I go by and take pictures of these places, and I just wanted to...
Yeah, it's... there's the little entrance out in front. That's a little covered entrance that's been added. We didn't put that on. We did put the fireplace in, though.
Mm.
It had a false fireplace.
Mm.
And it had a beautiful garden. It had azaleas and rhododendrons and trees and apricot and apple trees and pear trees. It was exactly... Well, that property ran from Walnut over to Catawba. To walk directly across the street on Catawba, you would come to 69 Catawba.
Yeah.
That's the house that we ultimately bought.
Yeah.
It went on the market on the quarters, the owner of it, talking to me one day and said he was thinking about selling the property. In fact, he had it on the market. And nobody was interested in it. The reason that nobody was interested in it because he was asking too much money for it. I took a flyer and offered him some ridiculous price on it, and he took it. I moved in, and that was a delightful house to live in.
Very charming,
yeah.
Spanish style.
Well, Spanish,
inside.
Spanish,
but the
English.
Outside is English, inside Spanish, yeah.
Little of everything.
Okay. Now, let's get back to some of these other things. Well, we haven't really talked about your work downtown. You opening your office. And
oh, yeah.
Let's
well,
talk about that.
Well, I decided to go into private practice. I first talked to several attorneys I knew in San Francisco. All told me the same thing. Go where you're known. So at that time, I had made a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And... So I struck right out and opened and moved in with Paul Thorne.
Paul Thorne, yeah.
Paul Thorne was a very old man, office in the Keystone Building, looking Lytton Square. Did very little practice of the law, if the truth be known. His diary, which he religiously kept, would say that it's a nice day in town today and there's not too much traffic in the square. And what little work he did have, I was helping him with. And actually, I think he maintained that office so he could smoke.
Oh, he couldn't smoke at home, huh?
He couldn't smoke at home, and he was a cigarette smoker. After he moved out of the Keystone Building, he got another office and so he could continue his picadillo with the cigarettes.
And
what we did, we when we joined Paul Thorne, he had a library in the back of the building. Nice big room, big table in it. I brought up an old chair that I had, big office chair with a big harp back on it, spindles, and all these books all around me. I looked real professional, you see. And one of the early projects I had was the Mill Valley Medical Center. Located down on Camino Alto. Gives me a Safeway. So with my initial meeting with the doctors, and they were totally doctor-owned, came to my office in this library office of mine in the back of the Keystone Building, and they sat around this big table, talked about what we were going to do by way of getting a medical center. Came back in the chair, and the chair exploded. The spindly back of the chair just burst.
Did you need a doctor for your experience?
they nevertheless stayed with me, and in spite of that, I got the thing built. Interesting on that, we...
You're talking about the Keystone Building.
Oh, yes. The is quite a homey little place. The girls were all called the Keystone Cuties.
And they not included, cops, though, huh?
They included my secretary, Esther Frericks.
I knew her.
Esther worked for Cooley, Crowley, and Supple when I was a clerk there. When I was studying for the bar, I clerked at $25 a month for that. And Esther worked for one of the partners, one of the junior partners. And so when we came over to Mill Valley, it was Esther. And so when I opened my office, I invited Esther to come along. And first, she just came into the office and would take dictation and go back and work at home on it. And ultimately, it became a full-time job for her. And the Keystone Cuties, they used to congregate in my office. Maureen Roach worked for Bill Busby. And
I've heard it talk about some of the parties you had.
Oh, yes. And but actually, they were there every day for lunch. They'd all brown bag, and sometimes I did. Frequently, I did. And Betty Callahan, secretary. Marcy, forgot Marcy's last name. Secretary, whose name I've forgotten. Tough to grow old, kid. And but anyway, whenever we had an occasion, we had a party. Whether somebody was going on a trip, or coming back from a trip, or having a birthday, anything at all, we had a party.
That's what Maureen told me.
And it was great. I remember we had one party. It started at noon, and I left at 1 o'clock because I had a deposition in San Francisco. I must have gotten back to the office about 4 o'clock, and it was empty, disheveled. I went over and looked at one typewriter, Larry Mayer's secretary. She started a letter. It was perfectly in order, and all of a sudden she just gave up on it, and all strange things came on the letter, and she just walked out and left it. Those were the Keystone Cuties.
Well, about your business, did you have when you opened up? Did you have a lot of business, or did it have to be built up slowly?
It developed slowly but steadily, and it was never a wealthy practice, you know. I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I only played tennis once a week, and on Wednesday afternoon, a court or something. It was thoroughly enjoyable. I knew my clients, and most of them I knew well. And it was a pleasure.
Good. Okay. Let's see. We talked about the tennis and the tennis park. Yeah. Well, okay. Now, pretty soon we have two big things, the school board and the city council. Which came first?
Oh, the school board came first.
All right.
That was 60...
Ooh, you have down here.
No, let's see. It was 66.
Okay.
Wait, no, 56 to 60. Your turn. And I was appointed and for 1 year, and then I ran for the succeeding period. Okay. And ultimately I became president of the board, chairman, moved it with an iron hand.
Now, who was on the city council with you? Who were some of the names?
Oh, let's see. The school board came first, but I'll give you the city council.
Oh, wait, that's right. Okay, the school board. Which one are you giving me now?
Well, the school board came first.
All right, let's do the... Who was on the school board when you were there?
Oh, boy.
You can remember any of the people you worked with.
I remember them, but I don't remember their names.
Well, that's all right. Don't bother.
That,
and what was the big things in the school? Had the new elementary school the middle school been built yet?
No. That
was later.
That wasn't even in the offing. In those days, the big debate was basics versus the total child.
The total child.
Equivalent to that. And I can recall that we decided to adopt our policies, our goals of education. I can recall that I said, well, I think our first goal should be the education of the child. And there was a debate on it. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Was that when your headquarters were over the mayor's store?
That's it. They were upstairs over mayor's men's store.
Yeah, I remember that.
And in my rigid governance of the board, I adopted an agenda at the start of the meeting, and I allocated so much time to each subject and set up a closing time, because we were running there until midnight, and it was ridiculous. I remember one night, and I forgot the poor lady's name, got up and wanted to talk about something, and it had nothing to do with anything that was on the agenda, and I sat her down for the county superintendent and raised Holy Cain about it, but nothing happened, because was superintendent. I guess that's about it as far as the school board was concerned. But,
I have here that you were president of Ed McGuire PTA. Was that before or after?
That was after. That's when I was president of that when they let Bob McConnell go from, which was a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Bob was a fine superintendent.
And
he's on the school boards, and there'll be no names, but Ray Laugesen was superintendent, and it was a lady that caused his demise.
And
Bob McConnell was also evicted by a lady. Yeah, I saw Bob not too long ago. Good shape.
You can do the city council if you want.
The city council. That was fun.
Now, who were the people? Can you remember the names that were on with you at that?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, there was... George Wickham was mayor, vice mayor. Meyer. We find dig up.
Well,
that's
all right. I just thought maybe you don't bother. It's no big deal.
And also, at one time, the city council.
What were some of your problems that you were handling?
Nudity.
You mean just on the beach, walking around the street, or art hanging in the building?
It all started up at the old reservoir.
Oh,
remember?
Yes, out of the
we had nudity problems up there, and
is that inside the city limits?
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Okay.
And
Where was that reservoir? I guess I'm thinking of a different reservoir.
If you extended out Throckmorton, it just kept going. It would be out of the end.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Or Cascade
comes in. Yeah, right. Okay, I know where it is. Yeah. Okay, nudity, that was one thing.
It's an ordinance that outlawed nudity in public places. And some problem doing it. There was a split on the council on it.
I suppose. Any other problems that you've been
through? No, but one fun thing that I want to tell you about. Elizabeth Terwilliger.
Yeah.
Old friend. A beautiful marsh located next to Goodman's Lumber Company. In fact, it's still there.
Yeah.
Beautiful. A developer wanted to put a building that was going to encroach into this marsh, and he was coming before the city council on appeal from the planning commission.
Planning commission said no, but he wanted you to say yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Elizabeth Terwilliger got down there early, and she brought her stuffed birds with her.
Well, they weren't stuffed; they were frozen.
Well, these were stuffed. She has stuffed ones too.
Well, I always thought she had frozen ones, and then after an hour or two, she's left to get these back to my freezer.
Yeah, no, she did have. She had a freezer
okay.
full of
yeah.
not only birds but animals.
Yes.
But she had
okay.
stuffed birds too.
Yeah, all right.
And she planted one of these birds on each one of the posts on the that rail in front of the city council.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And all facing where the speaker was going to be, you see. And here were all these sad old birds staring at the at the microphone.
That's pretty smart of her.
And this poor attorney got up there to plead the case. It was murder. He was clobbered.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, I want to show you something. It's a little big book called Birds of North America.
Yeah.
And it was given to me by Elizabeth Terwilliger.
Yeah.
It's a note. Thank you for the many hours, days, years spent to make Mill Valley a more beautiful place.
I still remember her back in the White House with Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
And she was having him demonstrate a vulture with the arms out. He looked so sheepish just to say,
He did it.
And she's the one, she went around and picked up all the debris around the White House. And they couldn't figure out when these guest honors out there picking up trash. Elizabeth.
I had Elizabeth up here. I did a biography on her.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And again, we did the V's of victory, only she couldn't make it.
Oh.
Her poor shoulders couldn't handle it.
Okay, now let's see, your school board. How about your children, Eric and May?
Hey, Eric.
Tell about them.
Yeah, well, let's see. Well, they went to Park School and Tam High. Both went to Chico State. Chico State was a good school.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it still is.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them. Let's see, Eric is now in the computer business, a firm called Nacio, which he helped found.
How's it going, Nacio?
NACIO.
Okay.
Haig is living in Minnesota, in a community near Minneapolis called Plymouth. David Stein converted to Judaism.
Oh.
Yeah.
Eric
has twin girls who are now grown up. They were born in 1980. Haig had a son born at about the same time, Emerson Gadberg, that's the name of her first husband.
Nice.
Finished at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
music major.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And really loved music.
Mm-hmm.
But he's now finished school and there's no work for him.
No.
And nothing he can depend on. He can play gigs here and there, you know. But so he went to work for an insurance company for 1 year, and he's just skyrocketed.
Oh, enjoying it, doing good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And where's he live now?
He lives in right the same place he was living in, right next to the UCLA campus.
Oh, I see, down there. Western.
And so he's with them a year, and now he's leaving them, and he's going to study law.
Oh,
he's going to UCLA, and he's been accepted.
Okay. And the twins, and you see the twins.
Incidentally, he's leaving for Europe. The twins are spread out. One is down in San Diego. She's involved in some sort of automobile activity, whether it's service department or something or other. Emily is going to school at Santa Barbara City College.
What's the first daughter's name? I mean, the other twin besides
Julie.
Julie.
Yeah. Well, Julie's the one in San Diego.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's see now. Then there's hobbies, golf and home remodeling. Well, you mentioned home remodeling. You don't have to do any of that here. But you have golf.
Golf and tennis.
Well, sure, right, tennis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, tennis was, but I didn't know, you played a lot of golf, too?
Only after I retired.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. A great experience playing golf. You can play this or not, I don't care. Yeah, when I worked for Prudential, we were sometimes entertained by the builders that we worked with, the Olympic Club. And played golf. And, I was out there one day with Dick Payton, who was the other attorney in the office, a golfer, and I was a hacker. And the guy who was with Columbus and the Columbus Day celebrations, Mike Desiano, was the other player, and the other was our builder. I had a few bucks in my pocket, you know, but I never carried too much money then. Still don't. And we started playing, and we were playing so much a hole. I got to the 18th hole, and I figured that I just had enough to pay off. My partner said, double or nothing.
Oh.
And we made it.
Oh, I think it.
Poor attorney is playing with rich builders.
Yeah.
Where are we going now? We're diverting.
Well, you had tennis, and you played tennis all... After you moved up to Villa Marin, did you still play handball or something?
No, we played... what's called paddle tennis.
Paddle tennis,
it's
yeah.
It's played on a smaller
uh-huh,
tennis court.
Uh-huh.
As a net,
uh-huh.
Tennis balls,
uh-huh.
But you play with paddles.
Uh-huh.
It's a smaller court and you don't have to run as much.
Yeah. Just give a few words about your living here. That's changed your life from when you lived in a home and did all your cooking and gardening.
This was the right thing for us to do. It just, we came here in 10 years ago, 93. Enjoyed every minute of it. I've served on the board, on the finance committee for 5 or 6 years, on the admissions committee, which controls who comes in and who doesn't.
And
we've been fortunate in getting a great group of people here. Just quite a gradation in wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Some very wealthy and some not so wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Bob
has album here.
Yeah.
Oh, Sutton Manor. Yeah, that's where I live, you know.
Yeah. Back in the old days, and in Mill Valley when I was on the Planning Commission. A developer came in and wanted to develop Sutton Manor, and there was quite a debate as to how much fill he was going to put in there. I hear from Bill Fleming, who was on the commission at that time, and he quotes me not too accurately, but I questioned the man as to whether the fill was going to be sufficient, because that had been marked, you know, the cows were there up to their bellies in mud.
Mm-hmm.
And he assured me that it would, and I said, well, what about, you know, really high water? You're going to get high tides, and you're going to get south winds blowing, it's going to push that bay right up here. What about that? Oh, he says, that's all right. These houses are elevated a little bit, and they've got a foundation, a slab or a foundation, and so you've got a clearance there above the ground where the water won't get to them. Drive up to their house, and how do they get to the house?
Oh, you mean if it's flooded?
He was perfectly content with the fact that the water, while the water was all around the place and flooding it, it wasn't getting into the house.
It's been pretty close. One time we had water pretty close coming in.
Well, we had him up the ante, and he increased it. And there are two letters in here commending me for what I did on that. One from Shirley McCallum, the other from Bill Fleming.